And if there's no changes, then can I get a motion?
Is the thing you mentioned already on here?
It's going to be under new business. I was going to raise it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I'll motion.
Okay, so Michael moves. Someone want a second adoption, Doug? Okay. And all those in favor? Great. Carried. Approval of the minutes from the April 19th meeting. Does everybody have a chance to read through those? Yes. Anyone want to move adoption or if there's any changes? So moved. Okay. David. Seconder. Okay. Doug's in there. And all those in favor? Yeah, great. Thank you. Business arising from the minutes.
One question, if there was that one motion that I made, that of course was not accepted, I'm guessing.
Okay, so I was going to bring it on under recommendations. Oh, well, that's recommendations to council, but sure, I can follow up. So it actually hasn't gone to council yet. It's on the agenda for next Wednesday's meeting. And so maybe I'll just read to you the Select Committee on Environment and Sustainability recommendations from the committee that council pause the bus garage project public site and reassess the brief and renegotiate the design to include recommendations from the Sustainability Action Plan. So staff comment that the purpose of the Select Committee on Environment and Sustainability is to advise and report back to council on matters referred to it by council. The bus garage project has not been referred to the committee by council and was not included on the committee meeting agenda of April 19, 2024. Yeah, well, it was under our whole mitigation, right? The bus garage final report and conceptual design will be before council in the third quarter of 2024. Respectfully, committee mandates do not include the discretion to select discussion topics without specific referral by council. Should council wish to refer the matter of the bus garage to the committee, the referral should be made by resolution of council. So it could still come back to the committee. I'm not sure exactly what that would look like from the committee's review perspective, or I don't know.
It would just bounce.
It would just bounce. So, anyways, but
it could just bounce it unless people have a different opinion now.
Yeah, so we will have to wait and see if council refers the matter back to the committee. Yes.
Just for clarification, I understood what you read, but in terms of what would happen, does that mean that this motion would not be presented to council? Or?
Well, it is on the agenda. On the council agenda,
yeah,
and I could move it,
uh-huh.
And but it could be defeated or it, that staff comment accompanies the
yeah.
Oh, so that's not binding. That no. if this group sends something to council, they could still consider it even if they never asked for that. Technically.
Well, generally we wouldn't
be.
Encourage that.
Right. there's other groups like this, and all of a sudden they can send anything they want.
Right, exactly. So it's basically that the committee is formed to assist council in the decisions that, in the direction that council identifies, right?
Yeah. So this is a by the way thing. By the way, we're thinking about this. We did all this work. Why isn't it part of it?
Yeah. I mean, council does, but I do have the prerogative to bring things forward from the committee if, that is something, but doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be supported by the rest of council. If it kind of, we're going along like this and it kind of throws the
thing. Right. No, you would hope that it makes them think, well, actually, why did that happen?
Right.
That's all it's for.
Yeah. And
hopefully a correction, but it's not.
Yeah. And then I'll just mention that the second recommendation that came from the committee out of the last meeting was that council adopt the Climate Mitigation Action Matrix dated April 19, 2024 as amended to reflect the minor changes endorsed at the April 19, 2024 committee meeting. And so staff's recommendation on that is that council refer adoption and subsequent implementation of the Climate Mitigation Action Matrix dated April 19, 2024, to its 2025 strategic planning process for analysis of resources and work planning. So basically, in the usually early fall, council sits down and does our strategic planning, and we refer different things throughout the year to that process, and staff will, with most of the items, I think even the blue sky items, as we call them, like the big ideas, we'll do a scoping sheet that will tell council what resources are required in order to make this happen. So if it's staff time, if it's money, if it, you know, what might have to come off the table if this were to be prioritized. And this one will take a little bit more effort, I think, on behalf of staff, although it is identified in the matrix what the costs are and the commitment would be from the town. So I don't know, Luke, do you have any?
Well, I would just add that unless there's resources behind the actions, nothing's really going to happen. So the strategic planning process is where resources get assigned to these things. So that's why I recommend it.
And that process is open to the public, and we encourage people to come, and there's an opportunity for comments and whatnot. It can be a bit of a long day, or days.
Yeah, I guess that depends on the structuring, right? How do you present it? Is it like, these are the things that we're now doing based on previous public comments? Because when you get the public involved, it'll go kind of all over the place.
Well, there's certain opportunities in the process for the public to comment, and usually it's more of a discussion amongst council and staff and come to some decisions along the way, but then all that, and it usually comes back then once we come up with our ideas, there's another opportunity to kind of vet through it. Yeah, and make those decisions, tough decisions on budgets and priorities and everything else. Doug?
Yeah, I don't know if this is a helpful comment. Just going back to the previous point about the first of the two motions, our last meeting was very busy and felt a little rushed to me. We had kind of a deadline to finish the matrix, and we went through things pretty quickly. Pretty soon after I walked out of the meeting, I had second thoughts about this, not because of the content of the motion, but because of the point that you raised, that it was process-wise. It wasn't within the mandate of the committee. And I was concerned, I felt a little concerned that it might be disrespectful to the council in the sense that we've been appointed to do a job by them, and we were, exactly what the staff comment said was doing something that was not within the agenda that has been handed to us. So I hope that I don't disagree with what we said should happen, but I hope that it's not seen by the council or staff as disrespectful of the process. I'm very mindful of the fact that the councillors are people who went to the trouble to get elected, and those of us on this committee are not. And we should be respectful of the fact that it's council that sets our agenda. And I don't think in creating that motion that any of us intended disrespect towards that process. We just had strong feelings about where that particular project was heading and how it was not consistent with the principles that we were trying to bring forward in the matrix. So to be clear, I'm not backtracking on that. I'm just sharing a thought about that. And I guess the other thought is I hope in the future we'll not find ourselves in that position of rushing through an agenda again if we can possibly avoid it. Because it doesn't lead to always the best. You know, more, it helps have more time to talk things over and be sure that we're on the same page. Anyhow.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, I think this relates to what you were saying earlier. Sorry, I didn't ask for permission.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm okay at you. That's okay.
Yeah. that you mentioned that you were going to bring something up about the mandate of this group. But what your comment brings up is that the feedback from this group is very narrowly channeled.
Mm-hmm.
And that motion, or what we submitted, came up from an aside, kind of, oh, while we're looking at this, this other thing comes up. I don't know if you're going to include this in your later comments, but I just wanted to note that maybe there is a way to formalize a channel of communication which is avoids this potential of kind of undermining the council's intentions just by feeding back with something that isn't strictly in terms of the subject matter that was given. Does that make sense? Like, is there a feedback channel that is formalized so that we can actually submit things on the side that are discoveries, so to speak, new business discoveries through the work? And if that channel is made, you know, when I made the comment, I wasn't even thinking about that formal kind of box or that channel. And, but then it seems kind of natural that if you go over a document and find, like we did, that other information is going to come out of that as a part of the discovery process.
Yeah.
So there might be a way to formalize that, and just it can be given to counselors to say, for example, the counselors can receive this and they can take it up if they wish as part of the process.
Yeah, that usually doesn't happen through the committee structure so much, and what sometimes can happen is that if individual members have an area of concern or an issue that they want to bring forward to council, then you're always welcome to write a letter and make a request, and then if council sees fit, then council would refer that to the committee. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So this group could do that as a whole, then. Rather than as a motion, they could create a message of that type, a letter.
So like Councillor Skipsey said, other committees in the past have chosen, you know, individual members have gone away and written their thoughts to council directly. And that's definitely a recommended approach as opposed to dedicating committee time to discussion and then formulating thoughts together and doing it. And I just as an example, like where this kind of tightened direction came from is that there have been cases in the past where committees were spending, you know, fair amounts of time and resources exploring issues that council had no interest in exploring. And so in other words, there were town resources being allocated towards something that was a dead end. And so they're like, well, why did they waste their time talking about that? Committee matters should be focused on those things where we're really looking for their advice as opposed to different topics that are introduced by some other channel. So that's why the preference is to, you know, fairly tightly to council's referrals directly, but you're all individuals as well as committee members, so you can always share your thoughts directly, you know, through the town, and those get distributed to council for consideration.
Right. So I think I was specifically referring to other information that comes up directly out of the deliberations we were asked to do, rather than new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a gray area call to say, for example, this one that we brought that was suggested last time or voted on is directly related to the emergency issues that we were discussing, which means it has to happen quickly. So you asked about that.
Yeah, there definitely is a connection. Yeah, absolutely, it came up in the context of something that's referred to you. You know, and possibly if the motion is phrased differently, maybe there would have been a different reception to the motion.
Right.
But, you know, like you said, it is a bit gray. There's no right or wrong, but just a constant reminder to this committee, all committees, that, you know, council is looking for specific things from you because they value your expertise. So that's all. Lessons learned, I guess, along the way.
And I'm certainly happy, you know, when I introduced this at the council meeting, to say that this came out of a discussion around content, you know, that was presented to council next in the next resolution. So, yeah, providing a bit of context as to do. And this came out of the blue,
right? It was December. It wasn't like what you were saying, like that this group just gets off on a tangent talking about, I don't know what, helium-driven cars. And then,
Yeah. Okay, so that this could come back then on the our next agenda, just telling us exactly how council dealt with these resolutions. Just a heads up. Okay, and then the next one is recommendations from council, and so this one has been sort of sitting on the back burner, waiting for us to get through the mitigation conversation and recommendations. So Bernadette provided, I think, the link to people so you could see the presentation where this resolution came from. And so I guess the idea here is that the matter of food security has been identified in strategic planning for an initiative, a food action plan is scheduled for 2026. And these were some of the things that came up in the presentation. And then also that the terms of reference for the Select Committee on Environment and Sustainability be amended to include food security. So I guess that has been done as far as I'm aware. So I guess maybe it's about being a bit proactive, I would say, for the committee to have some suggestions how we would envision a food action plan. And as we say, it's scheduled for 2026. I know the presenter of this information would love for it to happen sooner. I'm sure a lot of people would like for it to happen sooner, but I guess it depends on what that looks like and what the committee suggestions are and how we might go forward. So I don't know, does anybody have any thoughts about
One thing that needs clarification is there's a climate change issue in terms of how food affects it, and then that doesn't relate very directly at all to whether I have food today or not. It's a very, very different kind of channels, and they seem to be muddled together a bit here.
Yeah.
And I think that the one thing is to separate those two. Or differentiate them at least, not separate better. Because the attitude toward the two is quite different. One relates to politics, food banks, and all that, which we heard. The other one relates to making too many cows or producing too much meat, better said, which is an entirely different issue. But they have to be treated differently.
So,
yeah, oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, you know, I mean, obviously one of the issues when we're looking at food sustainability is to somehow get a grip on just what our resources are within the community, within our geographical community, within, say, the regional districts as well. And so I guess we would need to have some indication from the producers of food. That's just what is possible, what their issues are, because obviously unless those can be addressed, we're not going to get very, we can talk until the, I was going to say cows, about what we're going to do, but if we're not going to have any impact, or we can't be supported by our larger community locally, I see that as a real hampering factor in what we're doing. So I would wonder if maybe one of the first things that we could take a look at is look at the composition of our farmers market on Saturdays and all of the people who contribute to that. Now there's a number of contributors there who are not associated with sustainable food, but there are a number of folks there, and they obviously would have connections within the broader community as well. So I don't know, that seems to me is one of the issues that we kind of need to deal with and have some kind of a sense of that we have what we're dealing with, just what is available, what the resources are.
Good idea. I like that. Canvassing sort of who's out there and what they're doing now or what they're...
And how they could support what we're trying to, what they're trying to do. And what are the roadblocks?
I don't know how many of those, I mean, it is Vancouver Island, obviously, but how many of those are actually called the beach? It's interesting to know.
There's a number. There are a number of small producers, very few. Like within the town?
Yeah.
Very few.
Like Mindy's used to be there, but I don't know whoever took over for them.
Well, there's Fierce Love, which is a young couple who've taken over. I don't know that. I think they've taken over part of Mindy's land. I'm not too sure exactly what the arrangement is there, but I mean, need we?
It can be broader than
that's what I'm thinking. Need we restrict ourselves to beach? Because there's a thing where we don't need carrots from California here. We can certainly grow them on the island. And not with them. That's not an issue. Or China, for that matter.
But how do we get people to grow?
That's it. And that's the issue. And then you send it. I'm sure.
Doug.
Well, it strikes me that food security is a very broad topic, and we might not all, right off the start, understand the same thing by it or identify the problem in the same way. Like, what is the issue that we're dealing with? You know, is it a short-term thing, like that there are some people in this community right now that we might not know where are confident they're going to be feeding themselves and their families for the next month, and then there's the issue, what's it going to look like in 20 years? As world agricultural systems are increasingly affected by change. So this defining the problem. Yeah, I think we did something quite good with the climate change thing in that we created a framework for thinking about it, not just a list of actions, but we talked about what the town can control directly, what can it influence by advocacy, all those kind of things. So a similar framework might be useful to talk about this. And a bit of a problem statement or bounding the issue and what we see as the key elements of that issue and how to deal with them. So that's kind of, you know, looking at the whole thing from high level and then zooming in on questions like the ones that were just brought up about local food producers and those kind of things. But it's big, like, we're not going to do that in one meeting.
No. This is not onto the agenda, well, strategic initiative scheduled for 2026. So there's time, right?
Okay.
It's not urgent or pressing, although, you know.
Well, if we had the energy and time for it, I'd be interested in taking that approach, like, really trying to scope it all out and make it clear in our own minds about what do you think the issues are?
Are you talking about public input as well?
Oh, gosh, I wasn't thinking about that.
Not yet.
That was based on a public input session. Wasn't it? Wasn't there a public input relevant to it? It was just inside.
The committee doesn't have tools to do public consultation on our own.
And I think that would be, like, down the road, once the committee sort of came up with that framework or the steps. I think
you could have a recommendation. Okay, here's the issues that we think you should have public consultation.
Exactly.
Who wants to be a farmer?
Angela, do you have any thoughts on this?
I do. So off the side of my desk, I actually run a nonprofit that supports Indigenous communities with various things. And one of the initiatives we're working on is food security on Vancouver Island. How this relates to the environment and sustainability piece, I'm not sure, but I'll just tell you what we've found is essentially the industry on Vancouver Island is so fragmented that anyone even interested in farming, which is rare in itself, but even if we had 50 new farmers move here today, they just wouldn't be profitable. And so what's missing is essentially like in Saskatchewan, how co-ops started, not as a fuel supplier or liquor store, but actually agricultural logistics, you know, for exactly this issue back in 1907 in Saskatchewan. We're seeing that now here still on Vancouver Island today, identical issue. What it needs is something like the co-op of the world or whatever that partnership is to act as that liaison between all of the small farmers to make it actually something sustainable. The main issue as it relates to climate change is, you know, the production required is expected. I think the UN says it's 100% more from than today is required by 2050, 100% more. And here on the island, I can't remember what nominal percentage of food we actually grow here nowadays, but as you know, it's really, really decreased. So the yields are going down due to climate change issues, but the demand is expected to grow 100% in the next 25 years. That in itself is the issue. How it relates to this committee, though, I'm struggling with a little bit, because to me, it's a lot about making it more efficient and effective as a business. You know, as I said, the logistics piece of it, you know, there's the local grower here that does the raspberries for Driscoll's, also berry farms. They're, you know, their raspberries are literally grown in Qualicum Beach, taken to Vancouver, put in the Save-On Foods truck and taken back to Qualicum Beach, right? Like, it's just, it's crazy. So it's complex. I'm sitting here quietly because, as you can tell, I don't know when to be quiet about this. There's so much to talk about, but I'm just struggling as to how we on this committee could support such a complex issue. So those are my comments.
Thank you.
Sort of, is this an issue which the, I can't remember the acronym now, the Vancouver Island Communities?
Oh, ADICC.
Yeah, ADICC might spearhead, because you're speaking among people who are should be quite conversant with the problem from various areas on Vancouver Island as well, and what would, in terms of lobbying power, would have more power than individual communities. So I wonder if that's something that they might want to take on and do a short-term study on and make some recommendations as a starting point at any rate.
Mm-hmm. I don't think the ADICC is taking on new things. Like, they just finally hired somebody to do the administrative part. They used to always piggyback on UBCM.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have the people power to do that, but there might be organizations sort of affiliated, or I know Community Energy Association, they did one, and they had all of the regional districts talking about things that are happening, you know, and so there may be opportunities, or even Island Health is another one, right?
So there's not a lot of coordination.
Through the ADICC. No, I mean, we come together, and if there's sessions on topics that we want to explore, those kinds of things, yeah, that can happen.
I think, like it was pointed out earlier, there's two components to the discussion. One is, how do we make sure everyone has food?
Yeah. Right.
And there's, how do we make sure that the food industry overall is not degrading the planet, contributing to climate change? And also, how do we make it viable for people to run farm operations? So how do we make sure people have food? Like, one organization that is tackling that comes from the emergency preparedness side, you know, because it's very stuff. You know, we know that there's a limited quantity of food on the island. So from the emergency realm, like emergency management climate readiness, which is a provincial ministry, they are looking at that in terms of how to make the island more resilient. Supporting farmers is a different kind of topic, but I do know that the Ministry of Agriculture is probably the best place to spearhead a challenge. ABICC would be great, but they don't have the resources.
Yeah.
The Ministry of Agriculture does have the resources and a lot of expertise. And so I've had great discussions with staff people there So between the Ministry of Agriculture and the other group is the Agricultural Land Commission, because they have a huge influence on the land base that's available for agriculture. And then on the community development side, the economic development side, I think probably the best group to lobby would be something like the Vancouver Island Coastal Economic Development Association or the Chambers of Commerce or something to really stimulate it from realm of economic capabilities. So lots of different directions that food security goes, and that's why it's so complex. And I would all add that that's also why it's probably really important for this group to help put some bounds around what a food security initiative would look like, because otherwise, you know, we're going to be chasing our tails in 50 different directions for the next 20 years trying to put together this plan. So that might be a really worthwhile contribution for the group to make today, is put some bounds around the thing in the first place.
Right. I think from an operations management point of view, you'd want to figure out kind of the geometry of how this thing scales. And from that, you can give your values as to what Qualicum Beach would be involved in. What I mean is that with the climate changing, agriculture is going to become more viable on the island. There'll be more rain, it'll be warmer. And there's already a lot of agricultural land which is unused because of people having farmed since 1906. And I think the concept, like with the idea that you're building a new system, has to be taken seriously. There isn't a system here. Like, the corporations are like floating at a very at a certain scale, and we can do a lot beneath them, so to speak. Grassroots, I guess, would be one word that you use for that, but it's not really grassroots. It's more like
local
carrots, I don't know. It's more, you know, so I think that if this, building on what you're saying, is that you could kind of build a kind of an idea of a relationship to the wider island, and then locate Qualicum within that, with a kind of a side thought of, like, how do you coordinate with other communities? By doing that, you can actually structure communication with other communities to consolidate efforts or unify efforts or harmonize them. That would be, so the short version is create a kind of a relationship structure with the island so that we can locate our own efforts in that. That could be developed over a few meetings.
It'd be interesting to know how many other communities have like a group or food councils or some kind of something already in place or have been working on this.
Yeah, I think the Kowok Valley Regional District, one of their green local supplier companies, they've got a grant to a food security study for the North Island, so everything north of us. So that's just about starting. So there's nothing happening for south of there. And what we found when we did an assessment of the emergency program is that warehousing is a big problem here. Like, there's just one big warehouse next to the airport and everything's getting shipped in. So that's a weak link for security for sure. Like, we don't have enough storage capacity to last a very long event.
The Vancouver Island Economic Alliance has put a priority on food security, so it's more of the economic lens, but certainly entire island region based. There were some action labs last year that I was part of where we were discussing exactly this issue. One thing is it has to be regional. You know, I mean, looking at Vancouver Island as a whole, it's really challenging to just come out and say, okay, well, the town of Qualicum Beach, what are we going to do here? You know, as has been addressed already, it's just we need to look at this on a regional scale to have any impact.
And that means harmonizing the region, understanding how the scale, how it structures it, and that requires some sort of a system in place, which there isn't.
Right.
The RDM does have an agricultural advisory committee. So there is somewhat of the overall agricultural interest in the area. I'm just trying to pull up some details on, you know, what their topics are, but it does exist.
Lots of them,
okay.
And there's also a lot of grants right now for food security initiatives. Even just planning and trying to figure out strategy in itself can be funded.
That's good to know.
So are there, not that we just want to copycat, but we did find it useful in the climate change to look at what other municipal level governments have done. Are there other municipal level food security plans out there that we might want to read and poach ideas from? I don't know.
Or is it saying that in terms of this treaty here, that LA has done something? LA must have a pretty evolved system. Of some idea. What about Vancouver? They must, I mean, they must have something. Richmond's going to flood in 5 years.
Yeah.
And maybe 20. I mean, they've got to have an idea of what they're, I mean, they must have a plan.
They have a food strategy, the city of Vancouver.
Well, so that could be something we could take away and do a bit of.
Yeah.
And, you know, see how, kind of give us some ideas. I mean, I really heard that we're going to be talking all over the map on this until we kind of define the problem and break it up into chunks and say, now let's talk about this piece of it, now let's talk about that piece of it. But just like with climate, we said, okay, let's talk about transportation-related climate issues, something else, talk about buildings. I mean, it's also good to have, you know, just unregulated ideas popping up, brainstorming ideas.
Okay. At
some point, you want to organize it into a framework. Because it just occurs to me, well, what is the problem? I know for me and my wife, there really isn't a food security problem. Because there's never been a day in our entire life that we could not go to the grocery store and buy anything we wanted to. And it's not likely that there will be in any such day in the remainder of our lives. There will be for some people, for sure, because of the money thing, and there will be for our children's and grandchildren's generation for other reasons. And so there, I'm not saying there isn't a food security problem, but I think the majority of people who live in Qualicum Beach don't experience and don't anticipate really a food security problem. So we need to define why this is an issue that needs even to be addressed.
But maybe the issue is not to talk only about security, but to add the word community. So you create a food community, which automatically includes security. Because, for example, the simple idea of, like, do you use your yard for planting flowers, or do you plant some food in it? And if you plant food in it, then you have a reduction of what's required from outside the community. Like, in the last 3 days, we've harvested at least $30 worth of cherries off one tree, and it's still going to be at least three times that much. So we have not bought $90 worth of cherries this year, because our tree has produced a tremendous amount of cherries. And if there are 150 people with cherry trees, and there's a system to community to deal with those cherries, because we have too many now, and we don't have anywhere to put them, and there are, we all know about systems where they harvest extra plums from trees, extra apples, and so on. All of a sudden, you start to influence the store, you influence the wider food chain just by having something like that. So that relates to community rather than the word security. Security ends up naming a kind of a red light flashing situation where the police or the fire department is standing there, which we're all kind of orientating ourselves to. But really, this is easily dealt with in community. Because most of us, as you said, have too much since I've come back to Canada, I eat too much every single day. Every single day I have too much. I have to go to bed at night and I say, I've got to stop doing that. And it's really hard because it's just there. Somebody's offering the chocolate again and then you love it. You can't, it's like when I was in my ancestral home in Austria, you know, you go from house to house and you just get your tea four times. And it's hard. it has a weird problem. We're talking about food security, and I spend every day thinking I eat too much. So I think a word, using the word community might be an orientation that helps us to deal with it in a place of abundance. And that can then spread out. If you have a community, then you can spread the food out of the community if you've got too much.
Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, I was working with the Qualicum Community Education and Wellness Society, and they had wanted to try to do something around food security. And they hosted an event, and they invited people from all over the island and whatnot. And a couple of things that came up were like a community kitchen to be able to produce and can or preserve or whatever the produce. And then also what was the second thing? Sorry, I'm just having a moment. Well, the quality, obviously, of what's being produced as well. And I think it was just being able to share, you know, like what some people have excess of versus what other people being able to distribute, I guess. And then also store or warehouse things, as you mentioned. It's a big one. And I think we've gotten worse on that because we used to have an independent grocer on the island that had a warehouse that is now no longer.
Is that warehouse empty?
The big one is.
The QF one up on the.
Yeah, so we only have two. So they it's not too far from each other. So the big one is still kind of empty. The small one, they have subleased to the Barstow Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
So we're trying to fill it up and get some more internal stuff. So they're using it like a rental, you know, income kind of thing.
You know, I mean, when we talk about security, also we're talking about infrastructure on the island here as well. I mean, warehouses are one thing. But you look at that, the highway between here and the island, I mean, a very fragile link.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while we're reminded of it. I mean, if we have a catastrophic event, well, even as relatively minor, I hate to use this term, as the Alberni Highway was last summer, it creates chaos in terms of supply, distribution networks, and so on and so forth. We don't have any resilience, by the sounds of it, to deal with issues like that. You know, I mean, we know one day we're going to have an earthquake. You know, and the road will be broken. We could have a huge fire sweep down from the hills above Nanus and cut off that road for God knows how long. So, yeah, that's when I thinking of security, that's the sort of thing that I'm really thinking of. That's why community becomes, and reasons around the community become ever more important.
Right now, it would take a whole year for this community, if it was desperate, to ramp up with food. And you could. And you could probably do pretty well after one season.
Yeah.
Right? But
back of storage.
Yeah.
Food storage.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah.
And just having, you mean having a backup store? Yeah. Actually an emergency supply sitting there?
Yeah.
Stockpile.
Yeah. Nestle would like that. That's who everybody buys.
Maybe let me just take some,
no.
Like, some ideas.
Sure.
We did some bit of brainstorming here and then.
Women in Africa.
Yeah. So I'm hearing a couple of things, like dimensions to the problem. So the first was, of course, the resilience in terms of disaster, the disaster resilience, right? And that should be important. So disaster resilience. Community self-sufficiency. Right?
I think there was also the industry profit.
Economic
viability of farmers, right? Would that, Angela?
Farming economy is one topic, or economics of farming.
And then I think the other one might be more vulnerable people, like the kids who don't have
a vulnerable family.
Vulnerable families, individuals.
The interesting thought about that is we've been talking, I think we've been sort of presuming we're talking about people's access to food, meaning the people in this community, but we could, if we wanted to, be concerned about other people who don't even live in this community there, this community, their access to food, and how that relates to our food system. You know, there are other people
talking about
other regions who are experiencing extreme food insecurity, and we could ask ourselves, is that anything to do with us? And if so, what and how?
That relates to what I was mentioning about structuring a relationship to the island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, so you know, understanding ourselves.
Island food system,
well, that would be one aspect of it.
Are you saying to understand where the island is in the bigger picture?
And where Qualicum is in the bigger picture of the island. Mm-hmm. And since there's no structure, we can picture the island the way we want. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless there's other things that we, like RDN or something, has ideas, but we're probably looking at RDN area. We're looking at the area south of Malahat. We're looking at the area, in, you know, for Cowichan North, kind of. And then the mid area is broken up into this one, Mount Elizabeth Biosphere region, and then Nanaimo. So there's separate little regions that we can start to understand and then put ourselves into it.
The food ecosystem.
Yeah, the food ecosystem. Yeah, a food ecosystem. Structuring it, understanding it for, like, if there isn't anything in place, we translate it for our own purposes. If there's nothing in place, we can make it up. My favorite part is
But and we want to think about, though, I mean, maybe this is not in contradiction, but what you're saying, but it's not necessarily true that the best food system is one with complete self-sufficiency at a local level. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the fact that we import food from other places. That gives us more diversity,
right,
and it gives people in other places something to do for a living. We just need to situate that within ecological sustainability and equity and resilience and so forth.
So some things will inevitably be necessary. We'll have to get them off island. But that's okay. I mean, if those things are really necessary, then that's what it is.
What was the other thing you mentioned?
We've had this problem before. You know I don't have a brain. What did I say? Ecological resilience? I don't know. If it was important, it'll come.
Oh, you can't remember what you said? Welcome.
I think that's the climate stuff as well, right?
Understanding, what does that say? Understanding the second word?
Growing ecosystem.
Growing ecosystem. You were a teacher, right?
Maybe a doctor.
Ecological sustainability of buildings.
Equity.
Equity, yes.
Yeah. Because some people presumably are always going to be able to find food because they have the resources and money. And unless there's like a total global shortage of even then the billionaires will still be finding food to eat. So
I wouldn't really, you know, when you talk about understanding growing ecosystem, that could be misunderstood. It's more like developing a scheme to understand the general logistics of food, not just growing it, but food in general across the island.
So it's more about logistics?
Yeah, and it's more about locating Qualicum Beach as a small, like you only have power over what Qualicum does, right? So you have to locate what your capacity is within the wider system, and interaction is assumed. Because Qualicum is very small, and people's expectations demand things that are from further away. You can't produce everything.
No. So logistics, that's something.
Yeah, logistics and scaling across the island.
But Dan, do you have any thoughts?
I was going to ask if I'm just an observer or am I also...
Well, that's okay. I'm asking.
No, I think this is a very comprehensive list. The one thing that I was thinking about, going back to what you were saying about the looking at the logistics, is also looking at like the choke points or the weak points of the food distribution. So like we were talking about the high rate management or the storage management, like where areas we need to like be able to scale up in order to be more prepared for, you know, if we are going to become self-sufficient, where are the weak points in that? Where are the choke points where we we're going to have this issue?
That's a major one. It's also not just a physical choke point. It's also a systemic choke point.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you took Patterson out of the picture, what would be left?
Not much.
Make it natural.
That are you?
He's a weak point. Not he, but actually having one corporation that has so many stores is actually a choke point.
Yeah.
And then I think the climate change, right?
Right.
Climate change? Ironically, we'll probably benefit from it.
Because of the growing?
The increasing temperature, creating a wider spectrum of foods, more rain. Downside is more extremes, like potential for a deeper freeze, potential for a hotter day.
Yeah, like the Okanagan is experiencing the cold blast that happened last year.
Good enough list. Anything else?
Well, can we just, so maybe, does anybody have any comments on the plant-based treaty and how it relates to food security? That was the question from council. We'll just kind of go right into that one.
Is this the actual treaty or is this a description of it? This is
just the gist.
So this is the actual document that the council's been asked to sign on to?
Well, that was, yes, so we had a letter from our Qualicum Beach resident asking us.
No expansion or intensification of existing farms. What?
I think that's, isn't that produce? I mean, not produce, animals.
Deforestation. Oh, for animal agriculture.
For animal agriculture, yeah.
Angela, do you have a copy of this?
I don't. If you go to the website, the plant-based treaty, you can actually find it there.
Okay.
.org.
See if I can link it in the chat.
I've already found it. I'm good.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I was asking ChatGPT how we increase food security on Vancouver Island. And there's a whole, I can just resolve it now based on what it came back with.
Do Is that an ironic comment, or is there actually...
No, I'm serious. No, I'll just give you the headers it came back with, because there are only six. But within each header, it provides more detail. So enhance local food production, improve distribution and access, promoting sustainable practices, community initiatives and policy support, innovation and technology, community engagement and education. And under each one of those headings, it tells you how.
Well, yeah. I think they're listening to us.
It's an incredible tool if you use it for good instead of evil.
It sounds really good, but the problem remains how to do them all.
Yeah. Well, like for enhancing local food production, which does relate to what we were talking about here in this room, you know, support local farmers, access grants, subsidies to local farmers to encourage the production of a diverse range of crops and livestock, it says here. But like those types of program ideas are things that I think are tangible that we can take to council to initiate programs for this community, right? So it's actually, it's relatively strong what it comes back with as far as guiding this discussion in a useful way that supports council in doing anything that actually makes a difference.
Yeah.
Very good. Use the technology.
Do a journey.
Well, the beauty of it is that it allows you still to find so many amazing things you can think of beyond these, because what it comes up with are obviously issues that and things that have been out there for a long time. You can scrape those and put them in a line, because, I mean, there's, in a grade 5 class, the kid would come up with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not exactly, that's not rocket science. I mean, if you give that assignment to a kid in elementary school, they'll probably come up with most of those things. So we have to imagine also that this stuff has been going on for a long time, and it's not actually hard. I mean, this is an aside from me, is that the big issue today is getting people to do stuff. It's not knowing what to do or having the means or even having, in our case, enough resources. The whole problem is that people are so unable to work together. It's profound, and I think that the effort here should be about, like, for example, I thought of my mother and being vegetarian is impossible, right? And I thought, well, the whole issue is being told to be vegetarian. How can we create knowledge and interest to actually investigate what that might mean for those people who can't envision it, right? Or like we were talking about last time, like, nobody tells me I can't cut down a tree on my property because I bought it, right? I own this property. And then you could easily say, well, it's unceded land, so your ownership is actually a sham.
A lot of people don't fully understand the concept of ownership.
They don't understand the concept of community, ownership, regulations, purpose, nothing. And so the whole issue there is that that's where the gap is, actually. We have enough resources to survive an earthquake, no problem. It's like, how do you get people to work together instead of saying, my solution to the earthquake is to have more guns in the house. Because people are going to take my food, right? That's the American way, theoretically, supposedly.
And we could talk about that too. Like, okay, is that the disaster resilience? If that's the one we're focusing on when we talk about the earthquake, we don't know where that earthquake is going to happen. So does that mean that every place in Canada or the United States that might find its food supplies cut off due to an earthquake, that every one of those communities has to be food self-sufficient? Or
at least for majority,
or is the system rather that communities would come to each other's aid if one, you know, and so there would be emergency systems in place to get food from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a little inclined to push back against the idea of local self-sufficiency as being more than, it's great, you know, and I think I'd be happy to see more local food production here in Guelkham Beach, Middle Island, Vancouver Island, but I don't think we're going to ever get to the point in our lifetimes when Vancouver Island grows more than, you know, maybe 10 or 15% of the food that's consumed here, even if we're pretty successful in promoting local agriculture and growing more food. So we're still going to be dependent on communities outside of here and transportation and warehousing and distribution systems. So if we put all our eggs into our basket of all our gallons, that self-sufficiency basket, we could be. I mean, I'm not speaking against self-sufficiency, the more the better. I just don't think it's going to be the whole picture.
That's why a logistics and interactive scaling system for understanding that automatically leads to sharing. And but that would be an interesting study to find, you know, a visioning study that says, what would 100% food production on Vancouver Island look like? And then the next question is, how viable is that? How much could we do it? What are the costs of reaching that? And what is the time scale of reaching that? That would be almost a, that would be very much, and that could be a datum, like a datum on understanding how to work if all the fairies think.
It's kind of like those studies that prove that we could rely 100% on renewable energy for electricity. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it's useful to know that there are studies out there that model what that would look like so we can move towards it.
If I can add, I think there's the regional system, like food security, there's also household individual. So there is stuff that individuals can do at home to enhance food security, like I'm one of them, and like, you know, canning, growing some of your own food, canning, preserving, freeze drying, dehydrating, storing. Like there's people I know who have like a year's worth of food in their pantry. On the island.
Right. That would come under community self-sufficiency. There's different levels, right? We're talking about the community kitchen. Well, that would come out of the people who already have enough at home. They can then contribute either knowledge or time to a community kitchen, propagating the knowledge, which then goes into other homes.
I think we will never hopefully reach a stage where systems will break down indefinitely. It may be for a prolonged period, but they do eventually. Like even when the pandemic happened, we did face some problems with logistics, but we eventually got back right. So it's just planning for that extended period when logistics break down or systems break down. Like that's an important aspect of food security.
I think we could put a lot of productive work into that, and we also should put some of our time into the question of equity. How is it that some people can't get enough food or can't get enough nutritious food while others can? And, look at it from all those different angles. And then always ask ourselves, what can the town council of College and Beach do directly, or does it control directly? What can it do through influence and advocacy? And I'm kind of thinking the advocacy and influence problem is going to be quite a bit bigger than the direct control. That's okay. This is the question they asked us. If that's the answer, then that's fine.
So where do we go from here? That's a good question. For next time, do we continue the conversation in a different structured way, or how would we like to do this?
My suggestion would be that, you know, council's identified that we're going to do this food action plan of the future, but hasn't put up parameters around it. So just as our discussion here has started here and it owned in a few directions, I think it would be helpful to provide council with some guidance as to when you undertake this food action plan. Here's how you might should approach it, right? Here's the balance. Here's what might be included. Here's what might not be included, right? So almost like a little bit of a terms of reference. So that when we launch the study, when we get the resources to actually undertake it, we know what we're getting ourselves into. And with your guidance also, it would help us scope how much it would cost in the first place, right? You know, depending on how big you want to undertake it.
One thing I wanted to mention is that, I think we haven't actually touched on the other side of it, the climate mitigation aspect of the food. You brought that up by saying, what do we want to do this, which is basically if about eating meat. Fundamentally, it's about producing meat and creatures to eat. So there's also other things like using fertilizers and that, which includes the climate as well. So if this list on the wall is the food security in terms of eating and production and all that, then how would we address the other side of it?
And monocrops,
and you know, what's the balance between making, if you're talking about the 100% scenario, what's the balance between using forest space for food in terms of carbon and so on?
Sequestration, because you take the leaf all.
And so, how do we address that aspect? Because that's, on a certain sense, more technical, more broad scale, and not about today's, about anybody's life in a direct way.
So, just to be sure I understand you, when we talked about climate mitigation, we did talk about the town could promote plant-based diets as part of its, one of its mitigation strategies. Is that the kind of thing that you're thinking of?
Yes, and then of course the other thing is, I think that if you get a carrot from California, you're getting spending six calories of oil and other energy for the every calorie you eat.
Food miles.
Oh, yeah, there's that. And then, like you said, the fertilizer and other impacts of certain types of agriculture on the climate or biodiversity.
So those are things that, those are topics, right?
Yeah.
They're harder to deal with than the food security itself, isn't it? Because we, you know, you can say, okay, we advocate no more animal-based food, which is the hugest impact you can make. And there's the whole thing about how do you even bring that across? That's an issue. And so would you support that? Most of you probably still eat meat. So it would be hard to advocate for that.
You have something you want to say?
Yeah, that is a big question because, like, even though there are more vegetarians now than there ever has been, it's still hovering around that 9%, 10% scale. And so trying to break out of that has been a major question, and I guess, is this treaty the best way to approach that? And is there other ways, like not necessarily even going completely vegetarian, but advocating for, as you were saying, food miles in bringing meat production closer to where it's being consumed, or at the very least consuming meats that are not necessarily, that are more sustainable than others, and kind of scaling that back. And so, and I hate to say this, but in what way can we force maybe restaurant industries, who are the biggest like producers and sellers of like the higher foods of the higher climate impact foods like beef and such, they tend to sell more than necessarily grocery stores like per capita or so. So like, how do we get those menu changes for us?
It's not a question of pushing
people,
it's a question of attracting people to change. If the restaurant does not sell their filet mignon, it's not on the menu.
Yeah.
That's it. It's as simple as that. So getting to not sell the filet mignon will make people go to another restaurant.
Bouncing off of that, like in France, it's near impossible to find a vegan option at any restaurant.
Yeah.
Right. So like we have, at least there are vegan options at most, a lot of restaurants here, where there's vegetarian options. There's that.
Right.
How do we go, like even push that further? I think it's a good question to ask under this kind of situation.
Yeah, and that's not a question of food security at all in a certain sense. It's a question of what you're eating, which is related to climate in our case, because we're not going to go at it from a moral basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a climate basis that this is going on, right? So that's another thing to clarify, that people can get mixed up in their discussions.
about it. So it's always just what are specifically climate-based things. And then it returns to food security in the sense that if you do cut off certain forms of food, you're narrowing the spectrum of what you can feed people with in the case of a security issue.
With regards to the vegetarianism and promoting a plant-based diet, I really think that youth could be powerful in endorsing change. Perhaps it takes longer to see the results of that, but just an example is, the only vegetarian in my house is my 10-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. Both her and my youngest were horrified when they found out what beef was, or what chicken is, a real chicken, like just horrified. Those are probably very normal reactions that we become desensitized to. And I think if we did focus perhaps on education or programming directed towards youth when it comes to that, the impacts of that in the long term I think would be significant, and you would see that 9% grow significantly.
Yep.
Yeah. So good comment. Observations.
It's still hard to get the teacher to promote that. It's hard to get the teacher to promote that because she's gonna not want, or he's not going to want to be a hypocrite. That's the big question, is how do you get started, right? How do you expand that, and how does it not become kind of a, it's difficult, very difficult.
Yeah, but there's definitely a void in the lack of understanding of what it is. I mean, both my kids were shocked when they learned what they were eating when it was meat. And so there's, I think, an opportunity there to educate. I don't feel like a hypocrite because I eat steak and my daughter doesn't. It's her choice.
No,
but you know, sorry?
I got it, yeah. I was just saying you're not in the position of an educator. In that sense, you're the parent and your family has a structure, but if you're, I was talking about like in a school, having somebody stand up and say, don't.
Well, I think that's quite possible. I mean, you present, basically, you present information, you present knowledge, then they have a choice.
Yes, exactly. You're not saying don't eat meat, even as the educator. It's just, it's education around what it is. I don't think we actually, as a society, I'm comfortable eating steak because it looks pretty when I buy it. I would never shoot a cow and chop it up. And if I have to, I would be a vegetarian. So, I mean, I won't even gut a fish. So that's a disconnect, right? And it's an opportunity for us to do better as a society and change that.
Make everyone kill their own cow.
Exactly.
It's true that we are very disconnected from our food.
How many here have ever slaughtered any animals?
Yeah.
I was a butcher.
Oh, wow.
I've done my fishmonger, gutting all the fish and such. So
you know that.
Yeah.
I participated in the traditional, in Austria, the tradition of they kill the pig and they take it apart, and every part, every single thing is used one way or the other. But it's really something to hold down the pig while somebody's blowing his brains out. That is weird.
Yeah.
Well, I used to hunt, so you kill an animal and take it all apart and everything. What do you do? It's okay.
Yeah.
I will say this about youth. Any sort of youth initiative should also have a question about making sure that youth led. If I see that whenever youth are, like, having an educator get up there and talk to them is one thing, youth organizing other youth in order to enact change is different, is a little bit harder, but it creates more impact. And I think that if there is going to be any youth initiative within this framework, that we should try to make sure that it is youth-led.
So you're volunteering? That's what I heard.
Well, that's a good segue into the next thing and topic. So I'm hoping for next time we can come maybe with a bit of a framework or some ideas or some of the things that we've talked about and kind of go from there. Is that being fair? Yeah. Okay. Great. So under new business, I wanted to see if the committee would consider a motion recommend to council that the definition of our youth member at large be revised. Currently, it's very narrow. So it says applications will be invited from students at Qualicum Secondary School, Galena Secondary School, and Vancouver Island University when there is a vacancy. So I'm hoping that we could maybe broaden it and just have a range of ages, whatever that might be, like from 14 to... And that's where it gets a little bit tricky because everybody has a different definition of youth.
You are a bitch.
No, under 30, 35.
40 year under.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, internationally it seems to be up to 30.
30.
Yeah, 30 is a pretty common.
Yeah. The only one that's different is the African Youth Charter and they go up to 35.
Okay.
But, and mostly,
people.
That's Canada, 15 to 30 is a lot of their data and whatnot. So,
so you're saying just those ages and that's it?
Yeah, I don't think they need to be a student at Qualicum Secondary or Galena Secondary. I mean, that would be good, but it doesn't have to be. And I think in our experience that this format can be not the most attractive thing to young people who maybe find it intimidating or they have other things on their plate and, you know, just spending it part of the time. Or I just think it would be better to open it up from my point of view. And I thought I would throw that out there to the committee.
Yeah, I mean, especially if the age range goes to 30, or that's expected or is valuable on this committee, then certainly they wouldn't have to necessarily be at BIU, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay, so people think maybe 14 to 30 is the 15 to 30. That seems to be the 15 to 30.
How much under 30? Where someone was really into it and they were 13, would you say no?
No.
We could say it's a guidance.
So no.
Yeah, that's true, because if when they're 30, they turn 31, we kick them off. Right?
They can have a party first, but then,
yeah. A vegetarian party.
Yeah. Include any person up to the age of 30? Or
up to 30.
Up to 30?
Why not? A bunch of 10-year-olds can get organized and say we want on the committee.
Yeah, we'll take them. Yeah, okay. So would somebody like to make that as a motion? Because I can't, but the committee recommends to council that the definition of youth member at large be revised to include any person up to the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's seconder, David.
Do you want to add any reasoning to that? Are you adding a statement of purpose to that need? Like, what was your idea for bringing it just as a student arrow and you are going, there's no real reason to make it a qualifying factor, so you just, my impression is you're removing a limiting factor that doesn't seem to have any purpose.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and, okay, so there's a couple reasons too. One, we haven't always had a youth member, and I think it's really important when we're talking about environment and sustainability that we have that perspective at the table. And we had someone express an interest, and I think that it would be great to accommodate that. So.
Oh, I see. This is in order to accommodate him because he's on that.
Well, regardless whether he wanted to join or not, I would be happy to put this forward.
Well, yeah, it sounds perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, I think it serves the purpose of broadening the scope of youth, because we have tended to think of youth as sort of under the age of 20, 21 sort of thing, you know, that sort of narrow demographic.
It sounds like that. Youth does sound like a team.
Well, that's the thing. There's so many different definitions of youth now, right? And
so let's find our own.
Yeah, well, if you're 35, you think of youth as younger than that, right?
Right.
If you're 30, you think of youth as being younger than that. So it's always younger. Do you think of yourself as a youth?
Me? For this purposes, yes. I certainly am called to be, yeah.
okay.
I do think that youth, like, I would say I feel like on the cusp of it, having graduated both, like, I always think youth as kind of like in the student range in a way. But certainly, like, having connected with people who are about my age across it, like, about this, certainly is different perspective than I've seen from people who are older, including, like, my older sister and such, just because of different most experience. There is certainly kind of, like, a shift between the previous, like, generation and then the iGen generation, I would like to say. And I think that perspective is valuable across the board.
Okay, so I guess we'll need to vote on that. And I'll call the question. All those in favor? Everybody? Okay, so that will go to council then for consideration. Any other new business? And then we had future agenda items and discussions that we have on our list, and maybe at some point there was an RDM presentation on water management, and I think the committee was invited to attend that. I can't remember. Anyways, maybe not. Well, a couple months ago there was a presentation from the RDM on that, but not to say we might want to have a presentation as it relates to food security as well in the coming months, right? Might not be a bad idea. The other thing that I thought of at some point is inviting the transit people there to council and or to the committee to talk about that, because that was something that was in our matrix that and I know there is a proposed change to the transit in Qualicum Beach at some point, and it would be nice to kind of get ahead of that rather than react to it later. But anyway, that could be something we bring up, or maybe that's something that could be come before council name, be referred to the committee, or committee could be invited. Okay, and then the only other thing is adjournment. We have a meeting to adjourn.
How is the next meeting timed? Is that before adjournment or afterwards?
I think the next one is tentatively, like, it's four times a year the committee scheduled for it. I think there's already a date tentatively booked in September.
I would think September. We probably wouldn't meet over the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so we'll send out a date. And Bernadette, who was here earlier, will send an email to everyone.
Yeah. And it can't coincide with UBTM because that's always the busy time.
Yeah.
But we will let everyone know. Okay. So I think that's it. Should we get somebody to move adjournment? Oh, done. Okay. Good. We don't need a seconder to adjourn. So that's 3:33. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you.